Hi, I'm Rod.
And I'm Yasmina. Welcome to Life Trek.
Today we're talking about what three things you would tell your younger self.
Did we put an age on this when you say younger self?
I'm 20.
You were right. Yep. That's exactly what I was thinking.
We talked about this a little bit yesterday. We tried not to burn it out by talking not talking too long.
I know, we're like, oh, this is so good.
But that's why we did this whole podcasting in the first place, is because you and I get into these great conversations. And
all the time. But specifically, yeah. These mornings, like on the weekend mornings. Drinking coffee in the morning. And just, you know, the kids were still sleeping and we would have these in-depth conversations. Some of them were like so in-depth.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of how we got the idea several episodes back to kind of start this whole thing, you know, capture those moments. But I do enjoy those conversations with you.
Yeah, I really do too. And I learn a lot from it, actually. I learn a lot from you, I should say, actually. So
I learn a lot from you. I feel like my words are just mumble jumbled in my head and then you like organize them and categorize them. Like, yes, that's exactly what I was trying to
I'm just
to
a
say.
Translator is all I am. it's funny because yesterday I wrote down three things that I would say to my younger self. And then you went off to think about it, you know, like what things you were going to address today. And then you came back and you said, I think we should divide this into three categories. And they happened to be pretty much the exact same categories that I had done in the same order.
Yeah.
I was like, that is crazy. So I don't know how unique each of our answers is going to be, but.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I definitely took the time this morning and was just thinking about it, you know, like what are those three things that I would tell my younger self? And I know I talked a little bit about it yesterday, but then I pulled out my journal, my bright yellow journal, and I started writing. And it was very therapeutic, I have to say.
That's cool.
And I kept thinking, yeah, what would be those three things? I think I would go back and tell myself a lot of things, like run the other way.
job.
Exactly. Yeah. But yeah, what are those three main things, you know, at me as a almost 44, right? Yeah, 44-year-old person.
Yeah.
What would I tell my 20-year-old self?
Yeah.
So what... Do you want me to start asking the question or do we just jump into it?
Yeah, sure.
Do we go like all three or just like one, you know, back and forth?
Well, let's take one at a time.
Because we clearly did not think all of this through.
No.
I'll ask you.
Yeah.
Rod. Roderick.
Go ahead.
What's one thing you would tell your younger self, your 20-year-old, young, dashing, tall, blonde,
oh my God.
Beautiful blue eyes self.
Yeah, that sounds pretty perfect. I don't know if I could improve on myself.
Would have been like, find Yasmina.
Oh my God, right?
Done.
Well, full disclosure on that too. Since I totally would agree with that 100%.
Oh my gosh, no, don't share that.
But I'm 10 years older than you.
Yeah, my 20-year-old, and that would be
weird.
Creep people out.
At that age.
It only works well when you're way older.
Yes.
That age gap.
Sadly, but I would have loved to have spent my whole life with you.
You're so sweet.
So my first one was setting boundaries. That I would have counseled myself when I was very young to set boundaries. There is a book that kind of illustrates this. It's got a funny title, but it's called Defending Your Nuts. And for guys, but you know, they use a squirrel. But it was really focused at guys, but they use a squirrel and his nuts to make the point. And they call it the non-negotiable unalterable truths about yourself, right? So you figure out what are the things that are important to you, and then you set boundaries around them. Like, no, like this other person or people in your life, you can come this far, but past this point, you don't mess with this truth that I have, right? Mm-hmm. Whatever it is. And whether that's well, it could be anything. You know, like my family is the most important thing to me. You know, everything's priority over my family. So if my boss is asking me to do something that's interfering with my family, nope, sorry, family comes first. Boom, right? If that's your truth. Or if it might be something financial, or it might be just like, you know, in a relationship, like I'm willing to fight to work through things, to, you know, have whatever difficult conversations I need to have with the person that I love. But at the point that it becomes name calling and putting somebody down, mm-hmm. and those kinds of things, that's, you know, that's a boundary. I draw a line there, right? So just setting boundaries in general, and the way that, like I often say, that which you allow will continue. Mm-hmm. And I did that for a good portion of my life when I was younger.
So how do you like determine what your boundary is though?
I think that it takes some thinking about, but it also is sort of intuitive. Like, how do you like to be treated? For me, like when I was growing up, I had a kind of a mixed family life. So, and I had a step parent that did not treat me well. And, you know, of course, when you're a kid, you can't do much about that. You know, I mean, you don't have a lot of power when you're a child. But as I got older and was married and had kids and all those other kinds of things, that person still was a pretty negative influence. And I did things to sort of distance myself. And then finally, a few years back, I just put my foot down and I said, no, I'm done. That's, you know, this was after practicing setting boundaries in my life for a few years. But I finally had just had enough. And I said, I'm a grown man. You don't get to treat me like that. Not me, not my family, not anybody else in my family. And, you know, you're done. You're cut off. And while I still, for the sake of the rest of my family, am, you know, I'm not mean. I'm probably a little distant and cold. But that's not a relationship I want to pursue mm-hmm. anymore. I am done with it. And it protects my own self. It protects my emotional state, how I feel about things in general. It makes me happier, to be honest, to not have that burden and that weight. Same was true for my ex marriage, that, you know, that whole relationship, once I started establishing boundaries of the way that I was willing to be treated and not willing to be treated, that changed significantly the marriage. I went from a state where I was accommodating and I was trying and I was willing to take all the sort of punishment in the relationship because I was trying to make the other person happy. But the truth was, I was miserable. And so were they, to be fair. They were miserable for their own reasons, which I won't get into. But once you start establishing boundaries, then you find your happiness. Then you find that you're in a state where, yes, I was alone. You know, once that relationship ended, I was alone. And there was times I was lonely, but I was much, much, much happier.
Dealing with the chaos.
Yeah, just like walking every day home into a minefield, it felt like, you know. And I'm clearly somebody that's willing to have hard conversations and work through issues. And you and I, you know, when we tackle something like that, we talk about it, we work it out, and we move forward. And it's so much healthier and so much happier to do that and establish those boundaries. And I've found for myself, it just releases me of a lot of angst. Mm-hmm. So
you've taught me that. Well, not that I want to cut you off.
Yeah, no, I'm good.
You're like, I set my boundary. But so we wrote these separately. So I didn't, you know, we kind of briefly talked about that yesterday, you know, what those categories are, you know, what we tell ourselves. So I, similarly, is that a word? Similarly, yeah. Had the same,
in the same way.
Same way, but I define it differently. And I wonder if it's like in a female, what resonates more for my brain, but it was self-love. And so definitely, because we talked about the boundary and I share with you, not that I'm, you know, proposing people to watch Dr. Phil, though I think he's off the air now, but years ago when he finally was, not finally, when he did have some good stuff before it turned into Crazy Town, that's when I first heard of boundary, like, where is your boundary? And I had none. Like, it got pushed, further, and how do you create that boundary? So,
And you naturally want to serve. Like, I've seen that in you. You do things to serve
yeah, and
others all the
so
time.
do you, yeah. But when hearing you describe, all this boundary, when I wrote down one of the things was what I would tell my younger self is that self-love. But then, so I'll start off by saying that mine was to live a more fulfilled life and focus on myself. Because I was thinking, what do I tell my kids who are kind of around, actually my son who's 20 and my daughter is 17, or I guess the younger kids, what do I usually tell them? And I keep saying, like, go enjoy life, like, just take advantage of all of that. And I think that self-love, like focusing on yourself, especially if you're one to always wanting to serve people, then that boundary kind of gets missed. You don't really know where to put it. I know I had a really hard time. I would say I still have a hard time. I have not been able to kind of master that. And then I think under that self-love category was kind of taking a step back and from getting a man's approval. That was huge for me. I think growing up in a society where, your goal really is to get married. I mean, if you're in your
Back
20s,
in
oh
Morocco, you
yeah,
mean?
back in Morocco, and if you're in your 20s, I mean, if you're 27, I think times are changing a little bit, but when you're 27, 28, I mean, it's kind of seen as a negative thing. You're no longer young and pretty. And so when you're brainwashed to think that way, then you're always looking for that man's approval. But again, that self-love, main or overarching theme, and kind of within that is even that boundary of like getting a man's approval. I think it's okay to date, but where do you kind of set that boundary where you're like you oh, what's the word? I'm losing my train of thought. Not train of thought, but I was losing that word. You don't really put yourself first, and you're allowing men to kind of take control of that. So I think that would have changed my course of life if I had that mindset of just focusing on myself, of kind of being more, I know
It's
women
like
we
the it's like the air when you're flying an airplane, the mask drops down and they tell you put your own mask on first, then you can put the mask on everybody else in your family, then you can take care of others, but you've
yeah
got to prioritize yourself.
exactly yeah And however you want to, those words that resonate with people, I think in my younger self I did hear that, especially when I was a young mom. I mean, I had my son when I was 23. Not as young as a lot of women do, but I still, to that point, did not set my boundary, did not be like, okay, this is me time, this is what I'm gonna do. People would say that, but it didn't mean anything to me. I'm like, what does that mean? I felt so selfish if I had to, go to the gym or go take a walk and leave my kids with a sitter or with their father. So it was really, really difficult, and I would say it took me a long time, well into maybe my late 30s, early 40s, to kind of, what does that self-love look like for me? What does that translate?
And from a guy standpoint, like if you're like guys do this kind of, most guys, I should say, do this kind of automatically, like they take care of themselves first. It's not a bad thing. And a lot of women take care of everybody else first, kids and husband and everything else, and they prioritize themselves last. But if you're a confident man, you will not be threatened by the fact that your wife wants to prioritize herself first. It doesn't mean she's being selfish. It's a positive thing to do, and we do it all the time, right? And I applaud you when you do it. I respect you when you invest in yourself and you do those kinds of things that are gonna take care of you so that you can then better, take care of the rest of the family and do the things that you do.
Yeah, I mean, it's, and I wrote down here this morning was like, just know your self-worth. I felt like I did know that, but I just wasn't sure of how to get there. Like, what does that mean? What does that mean where you're appreciating yourself and putting yourself first does not mean you're being selfish. But I took that as being
Selfish,
selfish. Yeah.
One other thing I was thinking about was a quote that I saw. I put on my Instagram page that was my own, but I went looking for it and I came across a different quote from Warren Buffett on this, and he said that there's one decision that he feels is the most important you'll ever make, which is deciding who to marry, You want to associate with people who are the kind of person you'd like to be. You'll move in that direction. And the most important person by far in that respect is your spouse. And like, to me, I think that's mostly right. But I also add to that, that just in terms of what will give you the greatest levels of happiness or grief is your spouse. If you want a happy life, then pick well, you know.
Happy wife.
Not make the wife happy.
That's how I heard it
before. Pick them well, right? Yeah. But they will also be your greatest source of grief if you pick poorly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so being like the whole setting the boundaries thing, you know, for yourself, when you go to pick that mate, and if I were telling my 20-year-old self, like, one of the boundaries is, you know, not allowing somebody that's going to give you that kind of grief. Choosing carefully somebody that you can grow with that is, you know, going to be a positive influence on your life.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we've got like two other ones, so.
Oh, and we're 16 minutes in.
Okay.
So I'm going to break there real quick for a commercial break, and we'll be right back. Okay, so we're on the second one. What did you choose for your second one?
You know, I was trying to put them, see, kind of in order, and I'll just go from just looking at my notes here. The first one that I had here was to my younger self. Maybe it's a top priority for me is appreciate my culture. And I think, you know, looking back, and we talked a little bit about that yesterday, I was telling you, like, I'm indigenous to North Africa, Amazigh, and I have been or was kind of ashamed of that growing up, because going to an American school and wanting to have like this Western view and look to myself was so important to me rather than appreciating my culture. And it's not until well later in my years, there's kind of like this weird identity crisis happening and wanting to learn more about my culture. I mean,
and can you say that, your, that cultural group again, the name of it?
Amazigh.
Amandich.
There's no D. Amazigh.
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 Ah, that's awesome. Okay, yeah. Cool.
So, and they're Berbers. They identify as Berbers, and they will, I mean, I've met a few people that are like, I'm not Arab.
Yeah.
I am Berber. Amazigh.
Yeah.
And then there's also Tamazigh.
Okay.
But
and the mountain people, mm-hmm, in the desert, sort of southern.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In Hosima, which I've never been. My grandparents are from there, or my ancestors are from there. And then they moved. They're a very poor group of people. And then, like, you know, even when we were in Morocco, you noticed that there was Arabic, there was French on the buildings, and then there was this other language. And you asked me, and I was like, I have no idea. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very square looking, interesting looking.
It's
script.
Like hieroglyphics.
Almost, yeah.
Yeah, and it was, that's
Berber.
Berber,
yeah.
And so that was like my people. So here I am, you know, my 40s, and realizing, whoa, I'm indigenous, you know, to Amazigh, and I don't know much about it. I've never been to Hosima before. So I think on my mom's side, they're called. We went to Chef Shelwyn before, you know, and you saw the hats that they wear, and the ladies wear this woolen blanket that they wrap around their waist, and they're really hardworking people, and they're very, very poor. People usually call them mountain people, which means Jbela.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very, very condescending word to tell people, like, so Jbela, it means the people of the mountains, and then one person is Jibliya. So people will say, you know, like, if they want to, like, get out of here, you stupid idiot, like, you know, Jibliya. So I was very ashamed of that, too, because that's where my mom's side of the family is from. So all these mountain people, and growing up, my ancestors, and growing up poor. I know both you and I grew up super poor. So as I was, I spent more time about, you know, like, thinking about my culture, and then we did iftar, you know, with my family on Friday, and there was so much to be proud of. I kind of tried to escape that and move away from that. And as I was taking notes today...
You mean when you first came here to the States?
Yeah, or the whole time I was here in the States. You know, I really didn't, you know, I didn't, like, I would say, honor my culture really in any shape or form.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, as I thought more about it, like, why that is, And I think it goes back to the American school, and it's considered a very prestigious school, and you're like very privileged. And I was always told that, you know, be appreciative that you get to go to this American school with these American people. It was more international school, but we had a lot of teachers, not just from the US, but from the UK, and mostly I would say the UK and the US. And so now I find myself very, what did I put down here? Just kind of leery when I see white people coming into spaces of like refugees or different immigrant cultures coming in, like teaching something or showing them, because I was those people and I was taught, to me, I was like, wait a minute, I was kind of pulled away from my culture to now.
Here's a whole new set of values we're going
to
give you.
Yeah, right? And this is the way to think. This is a way to dress. This is the way to eat the foods. Like, I really did not cook any of my Moroccan foods when I moved. And I think in the beginning, but it moved, like, not even quickly, but just as a gradual transition.
Yeah.
And you don't realize that you are now living this kind of Western American lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's okay. But at the same time, how do you do that in a way you're still appreciating to be a Moroccan American?
Yeah, so it's got to be confusing, because like there are some good things about all cultures, right? You can take away something from a lot of different cultures that are good, but that shouldn't mean that you give up your culture, right?
Yeah.
You know,
and there's some things in the Moroccan culture that I don't care for. Mm-hmm. And I'm now learning, like, then that's okay. I don't, and there we also have our own issues too with the Moroccan community and the judgment.
Sure.
And all of that too.
Yeah.
And I think then that's okay. So it's really trying to just appreciate your own culture and embed it. And I feel like I've kind of done that over the past few years. I think probably primarily you've been very supportive and you're like, yeah, that sounds great. We can do all, you know, we can do Eid. You came to Iftar and we're going to do Iftar here on Wednesday. And so I think that's something that I wish I had years ago. That way my kids can have grown up with it, but they're getting some of it now. But anyway, so that's kind of what I was thinking about that the more homesick I get, just thinking about, I really, really wish I would have just appreciated kind of where I came from and my people.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. So what do you have on?
My number two.
Your number two.
My number two is, my two and three are somewhat linked, but I'm going to say for my number two, it's invest. And I'm talking about finances. And so over the last 50 years, the stock market has returned on average. Obviously, there's been highs and lows. A couple of years ago, and we have a small investment, and it was like 13% or something like that. And now it's dropped quite a bit, you know, but it goes back and forth. And on average, for the last 50 years, it's returned 9 to 10%. So if you invested $100 for 50 years at 9%, that would give you $1.16 million.
So you're to tell me I could have been married to a millionaire?
You could have been the millionaire.
Oh, darn it. I need to go back. Self-love. I don't need a man.
And at $200 a month, and see, I'm thinking about my kids, right? You know, and I've been trying to tell them, like, now, do it now.
Because we learned
now.
That now.
Yeah, exactly. We didn't learn, my parents were just idiots when it came to money. And they, not only did they not tell us how to manage money, they didn't know how themselves.
Yeah, and you came from a really poor family as well. Like, they were just making ends meet.
Yeah, so how would they have known to, advise me?
Yeah.
You know, they couldn't even advise themselves. So, now I do have kids. And now I am telling them when they're young, you know, like, invest now. I can't make them do it, but I'm like, when you get that first $100, put it, you know, start investing it, you know, put it in the stock market, get it going, get it invested. And then if you just keep doing $100 a month or $200 a month or whatever it is that you can afford, take it out first thing so you never see it. And then it's going to your investment, it's going to your long-term future. $200 a month for 50 years at 9%, $2.3 million. If you can manage $300, that's $4.6 million in 50 years. And so by the time you go to retire, you're a multimillionaire, you know. And of course, there's all sliding scales in between. But the point being that of the whole compounding interest thing, you know, that money makes more money over time. And you're best if you can put it away and leave it alone. And I think I saw a thing a while back that was saying they were contrasting somebody who at the age of 19 put, you know, X amount of dollars in the bank. I think they had an initial investment of like $1,000 or $2,000, and then they put $100 a month for like 5 years, and then they stopped doing it. They just, other things built up in their life and they couldn't do it anymore. Contrast that to somebody who at 40 years old figures out, oh crap, I need to start investing, and they put $500, $600, $700 a month in until they retire, but they will never catch up with that person that did it at 19 for only 5 years and then stopped. But because that compounding interest adds up, they'll never even come close to catching up. So it's so important to start young and put that money in the bank and let it do its thing, you know, and just keep adding to it.
Yeah, I think that same concept too, like I didn't know about that when I was in my 20s, but I was it was communicated to me about investment as far as property, because my dad in Morocco had owned a lot of property. I mean, still does. And that's why I was able to get that little apartment in Morocco. So that's something I did learn. And for when I was in my younger years, that's all I talked about, just buy a house, buy a house. I mean, my ex, his family also were super poor. And they didn't, they've always lived in an apartment, then moved to kind of like a manufacturer trailer home.
Yeah.
So it was not really in their understanding of what that looked like. And so thankfully we did buy a small little house in which we use as our rental property right now. And that has provided me that generational wealth that I can pass down to my children, that normally you are not able to do that. I mean, yeah. Many, many Americans, even though it's such a rich country, we are barely making ends meet, you know, renting apartments at such high cost, and you have nothing really to show for it. So I think even buying, you know, a fixer-upper home, which we did when the stock, when we had that economic crisis during that time. So it definitely was, great. Yeah. It was a great time to buy a home. But yeah, I do wish that I had, you know,
So you took what you knew, which was property.
Yeah.
And you did something with it, and it's been beneficial. And for me, when I first got out of the military, I bought a house that needed a lot of work, but I put my own time and money into it and, you know, made it as nice as I could, did a lot of improvement on it. When you and I sold that house, it became the down payment for the house that we're in currently, and our mortgage compared to our neighbors is like almost half of what our neighbors
are. Can I share what our mortgage is?
Yeah.
It's $1,400 a month.
Which in this area is extremely low.
Yeah. I mean, and so I think not that we have like this extravagant home or anything like that, it's definitely, I know my younger self would have been like, oh, I would never be able to see myself. You know, again, we grew up in a really, really poor neighborhood. And to have, you know, a mortgage of $1,400. And I think, again, it was just...
Apartments around the corner are over $2,000.
Yeah.
Just for a small two-bedroom apartment.
Yeah. And we both have, both jobs. And so we don't spend an enormous amount of money on our housing, which people spend like almost half...
of their income.
Their income.
Yeah. I saw a thing that said during the Great Depression, the average person's house to buy a house was that your base pay was 22% of the cost of your house, and now it's around 14%. Right, it's worse now than it was in the Great Depression. The percentage, like, housing is very expensive these days. So if I took 100% of my annual salary, I would, and put it for 1 year, it would only pay off 14% of my house, thought. Yeah. That's my number two, invest. How about you?
Mine was, I guess, similar to somewhat money. It was don't compare yourself to others. And again, keep in mind, this is my young 20-year-old self wanting to live in suburbia neighborhood. So I think it in all matters when I was writing down is just thinking, as a young girl too, was I pretty enough? Was I fit enough? Was I all of these things? And I didn't have anything really, all I knew is I wanted to be better than, X, Y, and Z, like my parents. Like I just need to be, as long as I'm doing better than them. But then you move here to the US and it's just, I know in my 20s, a lot of my friends were, I would say, kind of at their peak, and they were buying a nice home, they were getting married. And so always trying to compare yourself. And so I would say, even, I was thinking, am I Muslim enough? That was really difficult for me. I think in the right in the beginning stages, when I first moved here, I actually started putting on a hijab and wearing an abaya, which I had never done in Morocco, because I was trying to figure out, like, well, maybe I should be more like these people, just again, just so lost.
What's the hijab is the head covering,
The head
right? But what's
covering,
the abaya?
abaya is more, I think we don't use that term in Morocco, but it's used here, but it's like a long, like, just not even a dress, it's just a garb that Middle
Right.
Eastern women wear that you'll see. But I became a mom really young, and being a stay-at-home mom, and I was just really ashamed of not having a college degree. And again, just, continuing to compare myself, to other people. I think I had a really false interpretation of how I should be living my life. And so I compared myself to everyone as far as, your finance, my looks, the education, my relationship. And now looking back, it doesn't matter. I mean, we are all walking through life, some of us these lost souls. And the more people I have met and talked to, realizing, we all have problems. We're all just trying to make it in this world. But for some reason in my 20s, I was looking for, maybe I was looking for that mentorship. And I'm looking at my peers to basically gauge, like, how am I doing in life? Where are things going? And there seems to be like a lot of, there was a lot of pressure. I don't know what it is right now. It would be interesting to talk to the older kids, like how they feel. But even now, I don't, I definitely don't compare myself to other people now, because I understand that we all have different goals. I have my set goals. I know exactly what I'm trying to go for, especially in the physique department, like going to the gym and setting those, as far as my foods and my certain weight training, that I'm doing. And I'm no longer, and I think I've told you that, like no longer comparing myself to what my physique is supposed to look like. I mean, I'm 44. I don't look like a 20-year-old. And when I was 20, I was not really, I was kind of working out, but I really didn't know what I was doing. I just was still thin because I was in my 20s. And so I think, looking back at, how, when you say compare yourself to others, it's just not a good measurement of how you're doing in life, because we're all on a different journey. And so,
Well, and you don't even know like if how real some of that is.
oh
Like
yeah,
people put
exactly.
on a facade and it looks like that's what their
Well,
life
that's what
is.
happened later on, and I know we share this with our friends and things like that. And people were shocked to hear that I was getting a divorce because I too had put on a facade. And you're right, you see people driving, certain cars, and yet here you still are still struggling, as a young stay-at-home mom, should I be doing this? Should I be doing that? I mean, when they keep saying, you do you, it's so true. Just you, as long as you're focusing on yourself and you have your set goals, don't get, blinded by the person next to you. I think too, in the gym has helped me as well. I think before, so I wrote, just I'm laughing because I'm like, should I share this or not? So I'm part of a training program, but prior to that, I was doing somewhat of a program, but I'm always trying to up my weights and up my different training. So I was doing these overhead presses, and I saw this girl, and I wrote on this group that I like, specifically this hot chick, and she was doing one arm overhead presses, like 30 pounds, like one arm, and she's got these massive shoulders. And I thought, oh my God, if she does that, then if I do that, and I will get that. So I did. So I would say a month later, so now I'm visiting a chiropractor about once a week, because it caused me so much pain. Like it overstrained my lat area. I mean, the moral of the story is like, just because that person is doing it, you know, does not necessarily mean that you're gonna go ahead and like get those same results based
Yeah.
on that. And so I would say,
Well, and she might have been doing that for years, building up to that,
totally,
and
yeah, and has
yeah.
a completely different program that I'm
Yeah,
doing, you know.
exactly.
And she's actually one of the instructors there. And every time I see her, I'm just like, God dang it. Like my lat is, it feels so much better now, but you know, that, but I was comparing myself to others.
Yeah.
And so yeah, so I yeah, thinking about this morning, thinking, you know, back in my young 20-year-old self, I did that a lot. I think well up until my mid-20s, maybe into my late 20s, just comparing myself where I need to be with my
Yeah.
peers. So
Yeah. No, that's really good.
yeah, what about you? What's your
My number three.
number three?
My number three is invest in yourself. So it's like my number two with invest, but invest in yourself physically, mentally, meaning education wise, language skills, job skills, all of that. Like, I think it's important to invest in yourself. Because of all the things that are going to be in your life, the one that is for sure going to be with you your whole life is you. So, one, take care of your body. So, you got on this program, and now you've got me, not exactly on your program, but also.
Was trying to get you into my program. You're
Well,
like, this is for women.
it is for women,
I was like, come
but
into
I'm
this
kind
high.
of, yeah.
Come into this cult.
But I'm kind of parodying at least the fact that I'm tracking my macros, the what foods I eat, my fats, my carbs, my proteins, and of course I go to the gym and lifting and exercise and all of that. So I'm trying to get back down to my slim girlish self. So physically, I think it's important to take care of yourself. Mentally, when I was young, I did a lot of investing as far as getting my degrees. So I've got, I went to college, and that was right in high school. I knew I wanted to go to college, but I needed to go because we also grew up pretty poor, and it's not like my parents could help me. So I went in the military, got money for college, and then went to college and just, worked two jobs and full-time college and ROTC all at the same time, and got myself through college. And then later on, when I was back in the military as an officer, I got my master's degree, all while I was still pretty young. So, I got to knock that out, and that set me up for the future because I did that investment. But in a similar vein, we should always be continually investing in ourselves in that way, like taking courses, like this whole Toyota Kata kick that I've been on, and it's probably annoying at this point, but because I bring it up all the time. But I find it so fascinating. And to me, as I look around the job that I'm in right now, it's giving me opportunities for more training and more connections and meeting more people. And I don't know exactly where that's going to lead me, but I know it's going to lead me somewhere. And so I think it's really important to keep doing that. Language skills every day.
Yeah, you're gonna be fluent in Portuguese here shortly.
every day I've been, practicing on, my language skills, and using the app to do that, and just trying to get, that's a hard language to get down, actually. I wish we were moving to Spain instead.
Yes.
But I'm learning. I'm getting there. So. And it's good for your brain anyway. So invest in yourself is my third one. How about
Yeah,
you?
that was my third one.
Yeah?
Yeah, that was pretty much, you know, I've got, so I would say just to recap, my first one was self-love, which kind of is embedded in that whole invest in yourself too, but it's just in my female love yourself.
No, I think that's super good because people forget that, to take care of themselves,
Yeah.
and they really and that's when too, I think we've talked about this in the past, where you see like relationships that people get so caught up in investing in others and the family, the kids mostly, right? That by the time they get to a point, a breaking point in a marriage where, you know, things are not doing well, and then the kids move out, and then what are you left with? You know, you're left with this weird two people living together that neither of them have invested in themselves. And wives do this, unfortunately, husbands too. So I don't want to say husbands don't do this, but where they've invested so much in their kids and not in themselves and their education, and then, you know, making themselves interesting, right? Interesting to themselves, which gives you confidence, but interesting to your spouse too. Like, you know, a lot of guys do this, you know, they get involved in watching football and doing, you know.
Yeah, just living parallel lives.
Yeah, and then you get to a point where you don't respect your husband because they're a lazy slob that hasn't really done anything interesting with their lives. Or you don't respect your wife because they're just taking care of the kids, but then the kids are gone, and now what is there? You know, what is there together? And I find you obviously attractive and smart and intelligent, but I also find you super interesting, enough that you draw me to you by the things that you get involved with, and they're separate from me. I mean, like, you get involved in community events, you get involved in other volunteer opportunities and stuff, which is awesome, and I support you in all of that. I'm not necessarily a part of all of that, sometimes ancillarily, you know, if that's a word. But
I believe it.
Okay, we'll go with it.
You're the word guy.
but I think it's really cool, and I find you fascinating. I find you admirable because you do those things, right? That makes you interesting.
That's why I like to hang out with you. Keep the comments coming. No, and I'm the same way. I feel like we do have our separate lives. We're individual selves. Mm-hmm. And I think you and I have grown a lot since our past relationships. And I will just say, so my three, to kind of wrap it up so we don't get confused on this, was the first one was self-love.
Yep.
And appreciate your culture. Definitely appreciate my culture, but appreciate your culture, whatever your culture is. And don't be comparing yourself to others.
And mine, again, setting boundaries, investing money early for the long term, and investing in yourself.
But we had mentioned, something. I was just going to say, you know, for if there's anyone out there listening, I mean, I'm always curious of, like, what others would say to their younger self. Like, what would be those,
absolutely,
maybe just one, or if you have like your top three, what would be those advice that you would give to your younger self? It doesn't have to be like 20, it can be like a 25-year-old or an 18-year-old, but you're that young adult self.
Yeah. On our Instagram page, which is A Life Trek, all one word, A Life Trek, go out there with the post that corresponds with this episode, and let us know what things that you would tell your 20-year-old self about, you know, what you should do, what you should strive for at 20 to benefit from the knowledge that you have now. Well, it looks like we're out of time, actually past out of time. I think this is about 43 minutes, but that's good. Thank you all for joining us. We hope you got something out of the talk. Again, leave us a note or drop a message on our Instagram page at instagram.com/alifetrek, all one word.